I've got diphtheria crushing my esophagus. I've got Ebola virus dripping from my nose. I've got the leprosy of the heart valve, exacerbating my incredible woes. I want to take my brain out and blast it with the wave, an ultrasonic echographic and a pulsating shave. I want a magic pill for my ailments, the health equivalent to Citizen Kane. And if I don't get it now in the tablet, I think I'm doomed and I'll have to go insane. I want a requiem for my disease, so I'm paging Dr. Steve.
Dr. Steve!
Yo, yo, yo.
Take a scalpel.
Yo, ho, ho, yo.
I do the vertebrae.
Yo, yo.
I need some such shit.
Yo, ho, ho, yo.
In the garage.
All right.
Yo, yo. Bring the crash car.
It's Weird Medicine, the addendum. Welcome, everybody. Or in Hindi, Vichitra Chikitsa. That's Weird Medicine in Hindi. This is Dr. Steve. I've got my pal, P.A. John, to my left.
Hello.
And his lovely wife, P.A. Jill, is joining us.
Hello, everybody.
We thought we would inject a little estrogen into the mix here and see how it goes. This is the Weird Medicine Addendum. What this is a podcast that sort of mops up the loose ends from the Weird Medicine show from February 2nd. During the show, we have people email us. We always give out the email address, and then we never get to any of the emails that are sent in.
Because we're so busy taking calls.
Oh, it's a madhouse, and we're pumped up on adrenaline, nervous, and trying to do this show in front of a national audience. And we've got Anthony Cumia in the studio, and Danny and is engineering, and they're passing us notes, and we're trying to do all this stuff, and then we're giving out this email address like we're ever going to check our email and answer any of those questions on the air. So we thought that it would only be fair to just sort of, because people send us these questions, we don't want them to just disappear. I started to answer them on the website, which is drsteve.com, by the way, and a few of these are up there, and I'll post more and more as time goes on. But that got to be a pain. We figured, heck, we need practice answering questions anyway, so we thought we would do this podcast.
Yeah.
So there you go. So that's what we're doing. So if you don't like it, too bad.
I guess so, you can turn us off, right?
That's right. Well, they can anyway. All right. Well, what's going to happen tonight is we're going to try a new format. P.A. Jill's going to read the questions from the listeners, and John and I will just kind of do our thing. And Jill's going to pop in, too, because she's actually smarter than probably both of us put together.
I'd say that's true.
And
Jesus.
And she's modest, too. And she, for everyone who's listening, by the way, you can see Jill on our website. She's most attractive, so we may be
turning the show over to her.
Yeah, turn the show over to her so we'll get more people listening. But anyway, all right, Jill,
okay,
take it away.
All right, we actually had two emails regarding this topic, talking about, as you said earlier, performance anxiety.
Okay.
One listener called in saying that he felt like he was pretty depressed. He had been unable to sleep. He's 27 and virgin. He has no trouble having erections when he's on his own, even after several beers, and says that he does admit to drinking probably too much. But every time he gets a chance to be with a woman, he can never pull through. So he was worried about what could be a good option for that. And then also another listener that wrote in wanting to ask questions about Viagra and about getting a script for Viagra.
Okay. Yeah, I think that guy, this guy was had the same kind of problem. He said, it's kind of weird, but sometimes when I'm with a lovely lady for the first time, I'll be a bit nervous and my performance may suffer. Not every time, but sometimes. Anyway, a buddy of mine gave me a few packets of 4-count Viagra, which I cut into quarters and then take it, and it helps his performance anxiety. And then he asks if it's safe to take without a prescription, and also can you take it beyond the expiration date. So let's just break all these things down. For the first guy, he is having performance anxiety.
Yeah.
He's able to have erections normally any other time, and he's 27 and still technically a virgin. And I think the pressure is just getting to him.
Right. Yeah. So he obviously doesn't have a mechanical problem, if you will, because that's he has right. no trouble getting an erection when he's on his own.
But. And that's one of the first things you do when you're testing someone who has problems with erections is to see if they can have erections normally. And for people who don't know, there's a little trick that they do where they take, it's like postage stamps, and you wrap it around your schlong, and then you go to sleep. And in the morning, if the postage stamps are broken apart, then you've had an erection in the middle of the night. And so you are capable of making erections or having erections. But anyway, this guy can, so this is a psychological issue. And for those people, I do think a little Viagra isn't a bad thing. Number one, he admits to drinking too much. That's never a good thing. Alcohol and erections don't mix. And if you've got throw in a little anxiety, people think that it reduces their inhibitions and they should be able to really go at it. In fact, alcohol is probably depresses your ability to have functional intercourse. So I'd go sober, and then go armed with a little confidence booster, which would be some Viagra, I think, or Cialis. Prescription for that, as long as he doesn't have any contraindications to it, heart disease, nitroglycerin, or other medications that his doctor can talk to him about.
I'm thinking the biggest thing is the anxiety being 27 and a virgin. You know, it's being a virgin's tough for teenagers these days, for the most part. And so probably thinking, I'm 27, I'm probably never going to get laid. You know,
yeah.
Just having that in the back of your mind, I think once you actually reach the stage, you're being with someone and you're with a woman that's ready to give it up. You know, that there is your confidence. You know, yeah. If some woman's laying with you and you're ready to have sex.
But you really want to feel like I've got to perform. Oh. And then when you go, oh, my God, I've got to perform. And then the last time I tried this, I couldn't do it. That's even more anxiety.
Right.
It becomes a vicious cycle where the more anxious you get, the less you can perform. And the less you perform, the more anxious you get. And so I think he needs a little confidence booster and having a little Viagra in his back pocket or taking it beforehand or even a Cialis at the beginning of the weekend, that if he knows that he's going to get lucky that weekend. Right. That would help a lot, because even just the placebo effect of, look, I've taken this pill, I'm going to be fine, will let him get through and complete the transaction. I think also once he does complete the transaction the first time, he won't have any problem after that.
Yeah, yeah. So I'd mentioned, of course, when we were going over the emails before we started recording, possibly paying for...
Well,
sex.
I mean, as a doctor, I can't recommend prostitution, but if you can arrange a situation where the person, it doesn't matter whether you perform or not, then you're going to be able to perform better. Yeah. So take that however you want. If you can work it out some other way, that's great. But,
and,
you know.
Maybe being able to perform with somebody in one of the chat rooms on the internet with a webcam and that sort of thing. I mean, there's more ways than just driving down your hooker street and picking up somebody.
Yeah, that's not. I think that might be not a bad idea. Mm-hmm. Just to desensitize himself to the whole concept of being with another person when he gets an erection. Let's talk about the guy who's taking the Viagra without a prescription. Look, here's the thing. Viagra is pretty safe medication. We have people who have this condition called pulmonary hypertension that take Viagra 3 times a day, and they do pretty well with it. The thing is, I never recommend people take prescription medications without a prescription. I think you should always talk to your healthcare provider whenever you're going to take anything, including over-the-counter medications. I really think that that's a two-way street that needs to be there so that you can make sure that you're not having some weird interactions. You know, grapefruit juice is one of the most powerful drug interactors that's out there. And people think I drink grapefruit juice every day. I'm really healthy and I got high cholesterol and I'm taking my Zocor for my cholesterol. And actually they're putting themselves in a really serious situation because those two drugs interact really strongly. So I think you should talk to your doctor about all these things. Don't take medications without a prescription. And what was the other thing? Oh, he was asking about whether
out-of-date tablets, whether that was safe to take or not.
The date is put there by the manufacturer because they haven't tested the activity of their drug past that amount of time. And that doesn't mean it doesn't work. They just can't guarantee it. And if they can't guarantee it, they got to put the date on it. And so if he's got some that's a couple months old, it should be fine. I mean, it just doesn't turn into something bad.
Let me ask you this.
Nitroglycerin, however, when it goes bad, it's ineffective. So when your nitroglycerin goes bad, all you out there that are taking nitroglycerin, go get it renewed. Just about everything else you can take past the expiration date.
I was going to say, would the compounds turn into something else, like maybe break down and turn into a different drug?
Yeah, nitroglycerin does, yeah. And there are probably a few others out there that do over time. And things will deteriorate over time, but if you've got, let's just say that Viagra, let's just say it loses 10% a year in usefulness. Well, you know, after 6 months, it's still 95% useful. So you're never going to be able to tell the difference.
Okay.
Yeah. And how many times do you see patients that walk around with their little bottle of nitro that they've had for years in their pocket, waiting to use it?
Yeah.
And they never go get a refill.
Yeah. And when they finally need it, it's not going to work. And that's why it's in a brown bottle. Nitroglycerin's always in a brown bottle because mm-hmm. it's real light sensitive, and light hitting it will inactivate it. So. Mm-hmm. Anyway, what else you got there, Jill?
Okay, this one actually I thought was very interesting and weird at the same time. Hence the
Excellent.
Name, Weird Medicine. this listener writes in and says, he actually says, oh no, I'm sorry, that's your response. I'm getting ready to say that he says this is a hard one to answer, but you said this was a hard one to answer.
What was the question?
Okay, here's the question. For some reason, I'm one of these people who doesn't bathe often. And you think often, maybe a couple of days. He says, no, it's nothing for me to go 1 to 2 weeks without taking a shower or a bath. When I do clean, I notice a bump on the lower inner butt cheek. It feels kind of like how the warts that I had on my fingers used to feel. Once I'm clean, the bump goes away. Over the next few days, it seems to go completely away. Is this something you've heard of? Question. The chance of it being an STD are very slim because I've only had sex with my wife and she has had others before me, but I doubt she's having sex with any others now. Can warts move around or is this something else?
Okay, well, first, he used the abbreviation STD just for those that aren't familiar with that, sexually transmitted disease.
Yes.
And first off, this is a hard one to answer because we talked about on the show, rashes and skin things are tough to answer over the phone and by email.
You know, I think they just changed that STD to STI.
Really?
Yeah, sexually transmitted
infections. Okay, yeah. Is that right?
Yeah, well, yeah. Because I think when we were at our conference not too long ago, they were talking. They were saying that it was at the STI, and I thought, what the heck is an STI? Yeah, so I think it's STI.
Well, our patients are confused enough by the stupid jargon we use,
yeah,
and then
they
change it on us, and then we're confused. So we're in just as bad
That's
a shape.
That's always hard to answer every single question. And sometimes when you go to the doctor, you ask them, well, what's this? And they sit there and they go, let me think about that for a second.
Yeah, they got to think of a way to say it.
Right, to make it understandable, make you understand it.
And that's actually a sign of a good doctor because the ones that don't do that are the ones I've got problems with.
Yeah.
I've had residents in my practice who have talked to my patients and have just used medical jargon with the patients. And, well, you've had a myocardial infarction and your left anterior descending artery is occluded by atherosclerotic plaque. And it's like the patient is just looking at them like they're speaking Greek. And, in fact, it's Latin, but...
Your carburetor's got some clogs in it.
There you go. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, and the other one that gets me is when doctors will say, oh, your test came back negative. Because... When do patients or people ever think something negative is good?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got a negative response. That guy is really negative. It's never good. So to us, a negative test is a good thing. But to patients, if you say all your tests were negative, they go out of there going, oh, God, he said my tests were negative. I'm going to die. So there you go. So, doctors, be careful with the jargon. Let's get back to this guy.
Yeah.
Jill, what do you think about this guy not bathing for 2 weeks at a time?
I think that's pretty extreme.
It
I wonder where he lives or he doesn't bathe for 2 weeks. Does he have a job?
I don't know.
What kind of job is it?
Some people don't smell as bad as other people do, and some people don't get as dirty as other people. There was a time in this country where bathing was considered unhealthy. And there are people now still that say that if you bathe too much, you're getting rid of beneficial bacteria on your skin, and we probably taking a shower every day is extreme.
Well, that's true. I would agree with that because you're affecting, you're drying out your skin. You're affecting your normal bacteria.
But so, I'm taking a shower
too much,
every day.
Yeah. Too much bathing is a bad thing.
I'm never going back to the old way. But I mean, when I was a kid, I took a bath, I think once a week. I sort of remember Saturday night was bath night. Mm-hmm. But now my kids take a bath every day. And I know that's extreme, but we can't stop it now.
Right.
You know, it's
well, it becomes
one of those
part of your
things.
Routine too with kids. So it's what they do before bedtime. But, I remember doing it in the summer too. Oh, I was swimming all day. Yeah. I don't need a bath.
Yeah. So I'm cool with this guy not bathing as long as the people around him aren't complaining. But this bump that goes away when he washes, I'm pretty sure I know what this is. I think he's got something, you know, an abscess or something that's draining, and then it's piling up, draining dried out pus or fluid, and then it's building up kind of like a volcano. And then when he washes himself,
debrides it,
he's washing it away.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking too, like a fistula is what you're talking about, like a little track between the skin and the rectum.
Yeah.
But it would be painful. So you would think
he
would be having pain during the time when it was full and he could feel it.
If it was just a little chronically draining something.
Yeah.
But if there is no draining coming from it, then, you know, that would have to be something that a dermatologist would have to look at.
Well, it could be draining so slow that all it's doing is building up, and see, if he washed every day, he'd never notice it. But since he's only washing every 2 weeks, it's building up. And so I would get this looked at because chronically draining things can be a problem. And chronically ulcerated things, you know, things with a scooped out inside that are painless, that are draining. Every once in a while, it'd be a skin cancer that's worth looking at. So I'd get it checked.
Yeah. It'd be interesting if he bathed every day for a week to see if it came back at all.
Yes.
That'd be an easy test.
That would be an easy test.
Mm-hmm. Try that.
Okay.
See what happens.
Try it. And then get somebody to look at it. All right. What else you got?
Okay. Good question about acid reflux. I was a patient who emailed and said that she just listened to the show for the first time on the 2nd and really enjoyed it. She's 52 years old, and when she was 25, she had a major ulcer surgery, and the doctor removed 2/3 of her stomach and blocked off the glands that secrete the stomach acid.
I hate to interrupt you. I think this was a guy. Actually.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I stripped all the names off, so there's no way you know that.
Okay. I don't know why I thought that.
That's okay.
Okay. Anyway, heard a drug you mentioned on the show tonight that gets things flowing in the right direction. Mm-hmm. You were talking about Nexium and other drugs at that time. My problem is when I eat, the food just sits in my stomach and won't move.
Sure. Well, let's talk a little bit about peptic ulcer disease and acid reflux, and then we'll get to the specific question. Peptic ulcer disease is usually, you know, the stomach has this lining. It's an amazing thing because it's just a bag full of hydrochloric acid, basically. And food gets plopped in there and it starts to get digested by the hydrochloric acid. And the acid breaks down bonds in protein and breaks apart sugars and stuff. It does all kinds of neat things and gets things ready to be fully digested. Now, if the lining gets an erosion in it, then the stomach can digest itself and it makes an ulcer. Now, at the bottom of the, if you swallow something, it goes through the back of your throat into the esophagus, down into the stomach. And where the stomach and the esophagus meet, there's a quote-unquote valve called the lower esophageal sphincter. Now, this sphincter is basically just a purse string kind of deal, and it's supposed to keep acid from going from the stomach into the esophagus. Well, it doesn't work that well. And there's a reason why Nexium and Prevacid and medications like that are some of the most prescribed medications in the country, is because not so much ulcer disease, but reflux, where stomach acid gets from the stomach into the esophagus and starts to chew up the esophagus. Now, if you have this for long enough, it can cause things like erosions and even in the end, I mean, can increase your risk of esophageal cancer. Mm-hmm. So it's a problem. Now, this is not something to be trifled with. I recommend anybody that's got heartburn, or in the medical term pyrosis, go see their doctor and get treated. And if it doesn't go away, you need to get a scope. And we talked about that on the show on February 2nd. You know, the scope is no big deal. You get a little anesthesia. They stick a fiber optic down and they look around for damage associated with acid. And they can also test you for bacteria called Helicobacter pylori, and that's very treatable if you have it, and that can make it go away forever, so it's worth doing. Now, this guy had ulcer disease that was so bad that they had to take out part of his stomach. And did you guys ever do, Jill was a surgical PA, did you guys ever do antrectomies and vagotomies? Were they still doing that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're still doing that. Yeah, we would do that, or we would do, you know, just a sphincterotomy if it was just a scarred down sphincter. But then, yeah, for a big ulcer, you do a partial gastrectomy or whatever.
Sphincterotomy, what she's talking about is cutting the sphincter that's scarred so that it'll open up a little bit.
Exactly. So you're not having this feeling, exactly the feeling that the listener wrote in about, the feeling of fullness, the food not going through.
Right. Now, what they did on him, it sounds like from his description, is they cut the nerves going to the stomach, that the vagus nerve that helps to produce or stimulate the stomach to make acid, and then they took out a chunk of his stomach and reattached it to the intestine. And that gives him a little pouch that's got a little less or a lot less acid in it. And one of the problems, as you said, is that can scar down, and then food will just pile up on the stomach side of that and not go all the way through. Go ahead, John. Were you going to say something?
I was going to, just kind of leaning, but when you said a lot less acid, I was thinking two-thirds less acid, since there was two-thirds of the stomach.
Right. Okay. Well, that would, fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Genius. Okay. to get to his question, the medication I was talking about the other night was a medication called Reglan or metoclopramide, and it's something that you can add to the acid suppressors like Prevacid, and basically it's what's called a prokinetic molecule. This causes the stomach to move in the correct direction. It's good for nausea, because nausea tends to be caused by what's called reverse peristalsis, where the stomach is pushing in the wrong direction, and you feel nauseated. So if you take Reglan and it's pushing in the correct direction, then you get rid of your nausea. Also, if you have stomach that's not moving effectively and food's getting stuck in it, taking a little Reglan will move it in the right direction. So it works for me to keep acid out of my esophagus. I take one at bedtime, and I don't have problems with nighttime heartburn anymore. So
you'll also see it prescribed in diabetics. Because after a long time with diabetes, you'll end up having a decrease in the motility of the stomach or the GI tract, what we call gastroparesis, and you take the Reglan, and it helps move the content along.
Yeah. You know what else works real well for that, works for that is
Taco Bell.
Okay, that and erythromycin. Erythromycin is an antibiotic that generally causes nausea, but in people that have gastroparesis, they can take erythromycin, and it will sometimes help the stomach to move in the right direction. So it's just one of those weird things.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yep. Yeah, some of the GI guys will use that as a last resort. All right, what you got, Jill?
Okay. This listener writes in, says that actually a question about his cousin. And my cousin has been doing this wacky fast called the Master Cleanse. He heard about it on the Howard Stern Show.
Uh-oh.
For a minimum of 10 days and a maximum of 40 days, all he does is drink some concoction with maple syrup, cayenne pepper, lemon juice, and water. It sounds insane, and yet he's only on day 5 and claims to feel fine. What is your take on this madness? Is this healthy?
Okay, no. Next question.
Exactly. That was a fast answer.
Good. This
God. Lemon, what does it have in it again? Lemon, cayenne pepper, maple syrup, and water. And that's it. That sounds like it's just going to burn your ass when it comes out.
If it ever comes out.
Oh, yeah, it would have to.
I don't know about this particular fad diet. This is something we might look at to talk about in more detail. I don't know where this thing came from. Cayenne pepper does a lot of beneficial things for the body. People who take cayenne pepper tend to have less pain from arthritis, for example, and there are some other things that it does that are beneficial. Doesn't make ulcers worse, and it doesn't improve ulcers. People have theorized that for both those things with cayenne pepper. The problem with this diet that I see is it's basically just a high-carbohydrate fast. And that means you're not taking in protein, which means you're going to be wasting protein in from your muscles to generate energy. I mean, here's the thing. When the body needs amino acids, it can get it two places. It can get it from the food that you eat, you know, to make things. And the body can make sugar and energy out of amino acids, but it can also make protein and building parts. And if you don't take in any amino acids or any protein, then you're going to cannibalize your own body to get those amino acids to use for building parts. So this looks basically, I mean, this looks like what, you know, mystics in the ancient days where they'd fast for 40 days and 40 nights. I mean, that's what this sounds like. And you'll hallucinate and you probably will feel good because you're going to have this sort of euphoric thing as your body is shutting down. But that's really what's going on there. So
I'm starting that tomorrow.
I don't see that as being a good thing at all. If you really, I don't even know what they're trying to accomplish. If they're trying to accomplish weight loss, there's other ways to do that. Even drastic ways of doing it that are a lot safer than what this thing sounds like. So I wouldn't recommend it. Yeah. Just at first glance, we'll have to look into it a little bit further.
Yeah.
All right. What else you got?
Okay. This is a listener that wrote in wanting to ask a question about Fleet's phosphate soda. He says he heard you talking about it on the show and you were describing about having colonoscopies and how taking your PrEP. He says he was wondering if it's okay to take Fleet's phosphate soda as just a colon cleanser, and wonders if he would get a similar result to the Eloise product. He's calling us now. Using
that's
Fleet's
one of the unfortunate side effects of being on call while you're doing a podcast.
Results to the
cell phone goes off in the middle of it. Sorry about that.
Fleet's phosphate soda emergency. No, I guess I'm wondering if it would be similar results to the Eloise product, which I don't know what that is, but he says it was mentioned one time back on ONA a few years ago.
Okay. Fleet's phosphate soda is actually marketed as an over-the-counter laxative for occasional use with the emphasis on the word occasional. We talked about it on the show. I mean, this stuff is basically like a tsunami in your colon, and it will absolutely clean you out. I mean, they use it for these colon preps. You take two doses of it for the colon prep, and by the time you go in and look in the colonoscopy suite, there's nothing there. I mean, it's absolutely clean. So, but it is, they market it for occasional use, and it's fine. If you had congestive heart failure, I guess, or if you had chronic gastrointestinal disease, I'd probably avoid it. But otherwise, if you just feel the need to get cleaned out every once in a while, I think it'd be okay. A lot cheaper than going somewhere and getting a high colonic, which I don't recommend. I've got some, I mean, look, an enema every once in a while is okay. I have some issues with the way that high colonics are marketed, where they talk about these accretions and all these buildup of toxins and that sort of, they have this theory of auto. There we go again. Boy, I'm going to be in trouble when I don't answer that call. Anyway, we probably need to wrap this podcast up. Very professional, by the way, of me to have my cell phone on while we're doing this.
You're going to the penalty box.
Yeah, I need to go to the penalty box. See, and I can't even put you in the penalty box because Jill's already
That's
here.
That's right.
Where was I? Anyway.
High colonics.
Colonics. Yeah, phosphate. All those things about auto-intoxication and stuff is baloney. And it's been proven time and time again. It's an outdated concept. And anyone who's ever seen a colonoscopy knows that there are no accretions in the bowel over time because, you know, you take one dose of this stuff and you can stick a tube up there and it's absolutely clean. So there you go.
Yeah. You know that Miralax is now over the counter. Did you see that?
Yeah. Yes. Yep.
I was just thinking about him. I mean, I don't know. He says he's needing it only occasional, but Miralax is definitely a great laxative to take on a regular basis. It gives you a nice, easy flush out without all the cramping and stuff. Of course, we did use it for our bowel clean outs too, before our colonoscopies, but of course in very large doses.
Yeah, and it's one that you can take and you can be pretty consistent with, you know, I got to use the bathroom in the morning before I go to work or when I get home from work. It's not something that when you do it, you've got to be prepared. 2 hours from now, I've got to be at our toilet. So
right.
Miralax is pretty good.
Yeah, Miralax is propylene glycol. Basically, it's colorless, odorless powder. You can put it in any clear liquid, and it won't add any flavor or texture to it at all. Now, the thing about it is, if you've had a change in your bowel habits, if you used to be regular, all of a sudden now you're constipated, I think that if it goes on for more than a few days, that is an indication to go see your doctor. So don't just treat yourself on this. But if you've got chronic constipation, Miralax is a great choice.
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
You're listening to Weird Medicine, the addendum version. This is where we're just sort of cleaning up our mess from the show on February 2nd. And we'll be doing this every time we do a Weird Medicine show, which, by the way, we'll be doing June 21st.
That's right.
We'll be back on the XM Studios June 21st. Hopefully, we can hit one of the two shows on June 20th and talk to the listeners and plug this show. And then we'll hang out afterward at some bar in Manhattan, which is one of my favorite rituals after the show. It's pretty cool.
It's delightful.
Cool. It is a real privilege to do this show. I mean, it's an incredible opportunity. O&A and Ron and Fez are just amazing hosts, and it's just they're so generous to give up this time to let us do this. I mean, blows my mind. It still blows my mind that we get the opportunity to do this.
Yeah.
And Anthony hangs out in the studio with us, or at least he did the last two times. And afterward, he said, you know, you guys do a lot of good on the show, which is just weird for being on Channel 202.
Yeah, not right, he said. That's just not right for this anyway, channel. But
what else you got? How many more have we got? Because we're probably...
We've got several more. I don't know. Do you want
to... Yeah, maybe we want to do... let's do one more, and then we'll do a second podcast later.
We'll keep on the same topic, okay. Actually. This is a good question. Of course, I think so, because I used to do general surgery. This is what I did. But anyway, or I used to help in general surgery. I guess I should clarify that. This patient writes in and says, she was listening to the show. He or she, sorry. I don't know why I think every listener is a female.
Yeah.
Because
I wish that was true.
I know, but probably most of them
are
men.
It is really a sausage fest, but we do have some female listeners, which is very cool.
Okay, this person was listening to the show, and you, of course, heard you talking about colonoscopies, and the question was, he or she's mother was 44 when she realized she had cancer. She caught it extremely early and had no long-term effects. It has been 12 years, and she's in the clear. The doctor said that the patient should go ahead and start having colonoscopies at age 39, but his family practitioner says at age 34. He wonders which age he should start with screening, and is 34 too young?
Okay. This is a great, great question. And the good news for this person is his family practitioner is a dad burn genius. Because the truth of the matter is that gastrointestinal specialty organization, I can't remember their name, the American College of Gastroenterologists, I think, recommends that if you have a first-degree family member that has colon cancer, that you get your colonoscopy done 10 years before theirs was discovered. So if she was discovered at age 44, then he needs to have his colonoscopy done at 34.
Exactly.
So having a first-degree relative with colon cancer is an indication for early colonoscopy, and that's the rule of thumb. So great question. We didn't hit on it the other night, but I love this person's family practitioner because they're right on the money.
Exactly.
So tell them that Dr. Steve said that he or she is pretty smart.
Very good.
Pretty fart smeller. I mean, a smart feller. Oh, that's what you call Appalachian Mountain humor.
And I was actually going to comment
humor
on
with
that.
Quote unquote.
With the whole thing about that is that recommendations before or after somebody gets diagnosed in a family, it's whenever it's appropriate to have it done. You know, if you have a concern, one of the things I've learned as a provider, if I don't. And answer the question that somebody has, then I've not done them a service.
Right.
So if you're concerned about it, you got to get it done.
There you go. And my beeper's going off. We got to get out of here. We missed the post as usual. That's fine. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Check out drsteve.com. Write us at drsteve202@gmail.com or pajohn202@gmail.com. Jill, thank you for being here. We'll do another one
thank
this week.
Jill.
We'll wrap
I'll
up the rest
to be,
of the questions.
Gender non-specific next time.
That's funny. I always assume everybody that writes us is a guy, and you're just a girly girl, and you just assume that they were all girls.
And I assume they're all transvestites.
And that says a lot about you, my friend.
And I'm married to him.
Yeah, that's right. And that says a lot about you. Anyway, thanks, everybody. We'll be back later this week with another Weird Medicine Addendum Part 2. Comfortably numb.